Good morning, and may it please the court. Carl Schifferle for the District of Columbia Appellants. I would like to save 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I might. There is no real dispute here that the district has an established track record of timely payments to special education providers, which more than satisfies its relevant statutory obligation. The district court's two reasons for denying relief from the preliminary injunction were both legally erroneous. The first reason, the court's hope that the case might settle, was simply not a valid basis for denying relief.
I assume it has not settled.
And it has not settled, yes, Your Honor. The court's second reason, that the district had allegedly overstated the relevance and significance of the Supreme Court's decision in Horn, it's simply unclear why the district court even believes so. Fairly read, Horn entitles to the district to relief.
You want us to send it back to have him do the Horn analysis? Is that what you want?
Our first request would be that this court determine as a matter of law that the preliminary injunction and related orders should be vacated. In the alternative,
how would we know that? I mean,
can we take expert testimony now and have a lot of witnesses? Oh, it seems like this is a real fact-finding issue, isn't it?
No, we believe based on the record that as a matter of law, the district is entitled to relief because that record establishes.
Don't we normally let the district court take a look at those things and do the analysis, and then we see how they did or how he did? Aren't you really asking us to be the district court here? District court didn't do what you want done, and now you're asking us to do it. We normally don't do that, do we?
It would be true, Your Honor. If there are facts at issue that need to be decided, that would be done.
Do you want us to go through the record and find those facts?
Your Honor, it is undisputed, and the plaintiffs did not contend otherwise in their brief, that the district makes timely payments to providers. That is established.
Though, as to whether or not the district had an adequate alternative to the monitoring by the special.
Correct, Your Honor. There is an issue as to that. Yeah. The question, though, of statutory compliance is not whether the district makes timely payments or what sort of dispute mechanism the district has. The issue of statutory compliance is, does the district obtain providers to provide services?
And suppose it does. Hypothetically, the statute says the district government must do 1, 2, 3, and the district government is sued, and in the course of negotiating with the plaintiff's counsel, the government says, well, we disagree with all of your arguments, but we're going to enter a settlement, and that settlement will cover 1, 2, 3, and 4. Then time goes on, et cetera. The district comes before this court and says, we have complied with 1, 2, 3. Therefore, under Horn, the district court should have granted us the relief we sought. I thought the district court, in part, was getting at the point that, well, here the district has agreed to 4, all right, and it's bound by 4. So if 4, hypothetically, in this case, is an alternative to the monitoring that now exists, why wouldn't that be something that the district would have to take into account? This is following up on Judge Griffith's point that I'm just trying to put it in sort of concrete terms, that if arguably we could find it's undisputed that the district is complying with 1, 2, 3, but there is this dispute about 4.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all simply means in this particular case. The end, statutory compliance, as I said, is just the district obtains providers to provide services.
But if the district goes beyond statutory compliance and in a settlement agrees to 4, does Horn still get the district out from under?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's our view of the central holding in Horn, that whatever the district or a defendant agrees to in a decree, those are simply means. The end is statutory compliance. So as long as the district has achieved statutory compliance, whether it's through 1, 2, 3, and 4 as agreed in decree or through some other means, it doesn't matter. That as long as statutory compliance has been achieved.
It's more than it's been achieved. It's that it's got to be durable as well, right? And isn't there a dispute there about
Well, that, first of all, that was not a basis for the district court's holding. Second, Your Honor, more directly, we're dealing with a preliminary injunction here, and so the concept of durability really isn't applicable to something that by its very nature is not final.
Really, is that what Horn says, that in preliminary injunctions, so you don't have to prove durable in order to get out from under it? Horn doesn't say anything like that, does it?
No, Your Honor, I don't mean to say that Horn did. I'm simply saying Horn was dealing with a relief from a final judgment, which has a finality interest that a preliminary injunction by its very nature doesn't have. And so if you're looking at the concept of durability, it just doesn't make any sense to apply that same concept to a preliminary injunction, which is not final, hasn't been resolved based on a trial on the merits. I would also point out that to the extent durability is an issue, that we have a sustained record of timely payments to providers. That is not
in dispute. How many years is that sustained record?
Your Honor, we did, in our brief, a compilation of the year prior to the district court's decision, and it's our position that...
That's 1 year.
So that's 1 year, but it's our position that based on the test, affidavits that were included with our motion, the testimony of responsible officials, that the payments had been timely for a number of years.
Is there no genuine issue of material fact as to whether or not it's durable? It's one thing to say that you've done it for a year and have experts say, well, maybe that goes back further. But the question of durability has to do with what the evidence is that it will continue. And that seems like a very hard question for us to make a determination of when the opposing side argues for a number of other reasons structurally it's not going to be durable. This doesn't mean you don't win in the end. But the question is, you're raising really a series of sort of predictions about whether what you've succeeded on for 1 year is going to continue.
Yes, Your Honor, but it's durability of statutory compliance, not durability.
I understand. And the durability is that that the payments continue and that you're able to continue to provide the appropriate level of education.
Yes, and it's been several years at least since even a single provider has threatened to discontinue services due to non-payment. Again, this is undisputed. If it's been several years, that in itself isn't even the statutory test, because the district, if a provider doesn't wish to provide services because of a payment dispute, the district can simply get another provider. Again, there's no issue about statutory compliance. It would only be if there were widespread non-payment issues that caused essentially every provider to refuse to provide services. That situation might have existed in 1995, but it's been 16 years.
Right, well, that would be right if there hadn't been a history before of those kind of widespread problems. And given that history, the question is whether a year or two of compliance is sufficient. And that may be completely correct about that, and maybe it's actually 10 years of compliance, and we don't really know that. But it's a very hard question for this court to make that determination.
But first
without
of all,
without the district court at least reviewing the facts once.
Okay. But this court doesn't need to have concern about that, because even if the preliminary injunction related orders are vacated, the case still remains in the district court. And if in the future, some future event warrants further relief from the district court will be able to do so immediately. And I would point out that a preliminary injunction, as its prerequisite, requires imminent harm. Just the possibility or the speculation that harm might occur in the future is not a legitimate basis for a preliminary injunction or its continuation. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, if I may reserve.
All right.
There are no further questions.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Steve Ney, representing the appellees. The question as...
Ney, are you in complete agreement on the facts with the opposing side?
No, we're not.
Oh. In what way do you disagree?
Well, it goes to the question that you were, I think, all raising before about a durable remedy. They're definitely closer to compliance with the underlying obligations of federal law. But the question is, will those be sustained? Will they be durable? Are the mechanisms in place to assure continued compliance in the future? And those would be the...
How many years of compliance do you agree there has been?
It depends on what is compliance. There still are violations of the order that are occurring They're not as frequent and not as serious as they were in the past. There still are late payments being made on a monthly basis.
But I think, as your opponent argued, the issue is less compliance with the order than with the statute, right? And that's what Horn teaches us. We're supposed to look at the statute. And so how long have they been in compliance with the statute?
Well, the
are they in compliance with the statute at all today, in your view?
Yes, I agree that there are few, if any, placements that are being jeopardized by by non-payments.
How long has that condition obtained?
That's obtained for several years, I would say.
Well, that seems rather significant, doesn't it?
Yes, it is significant, but it's still premature, we think.
When does several years move from being premature to evidence of durability? The things have actually changed and that they got the message and they're obeying the law.
I think the kind of conundrum, so to speak, is the fact that the compliance that's been achieved is due to the, as they've admitted in their papers, the existence of the court orders and the monitoring and the dispute resolution mechanism that's there.
So what must the district do precisely to get out from under the injunction? You can see that they've been in compliance for several years with the statutory requirement. Is that correct?
Yes. As I said, but the question.
So where is the imminent harm?
The harm is because they do not have the mechanisms in place to sustain it once the court orders go away.
Well,
suppose
the injunction is lifted and everything goes along just fine for 6 or 7 months, and then one provider says, I'm not going to provide services anymore because of I'm not getting paid or late payments, and the district says, well, you know, provider A won't provide, but we can provide the same services with provider B. All right? That's one hypothetical. The other hypothetical is there is no hypothetical provider B. Can't you go back to the district court and seek further relief?
Yes, we could.
And why doesn't that satisfy all of the interests that your clients have in terms of the complaint was that because of late payments and non-payments, providers were either refusing or threatening not to provide services.
The major structural impediment is the lack of a dispute resolution mechanism for the late payments, and the district has pointed to an MOU that one of the two agencies involved has entered into with the district to provide a dispute resolution using the Office of Administrative Hearings.
And
the other eight
pointed to the CAB as well.
Well, the CAB is, I think they have conceded in earlier papers that it's really impractical because the providers do not have contracts with the district. That was one of the objectives over the years of getting the providers to have contracts. They don't, almost none of them have contracts. So it's not a viable alternative. The one of the two agencies does not have an MOU with the district. The MOU also is terminable either
That's
by
the public schools?
Yes, the District of Columbia Public
All
Schools
right.
does not have an MOU.
You're representing only private.
We represent the students in both public and private schools who are getting served by private providers.
Right.
There are students in the public schools who get what are called related services, speech, physical therapy, et cetera, that are provided by private providers. And that agency, DCPS, does not have this MOU. I mean, clearly that.
So you're saying the fundamental flaw is that there's no, the fundamental issue on durability is there's no dispute resolution mechanism in place?
That's one of the. There's no dispute resolution mechanism that's in place, instituted, and tested to see if it's going to substitute for the special master who has been for years now hearing these disputes.
Instituted and tested.
And tested, yes.
What does that mean?
Well, we want to see it in operation.
How long?
We would say for a year. There's been backsliding in the other portion of this Petty's case, which is the transportation piece that's not before you today.
Right.
But we had everything worked out on paper to transition the case out. Mr. Gilmore was the administrator of had essentially the receiver or quasi-receiver, that bus
right,
system.
Let's not argue in case it's not before us. You talk about a durable remedy in terms of budget security. Exactly what do you mean by that?
Let me explain the position on that. The special master wrote a report several years ago indicating what would be needed. This was in 2005.
No, but these were guidelines.
These were guidelines or indicators.
Right.
And that was one of the indicators. I would agree
what
that...
What does that mean, budget security?
Well, I think we wanted to see, does the district have the plans and procedures and structures in place to know that they have the money?
It has a budget process.
Mm-hmm.
And it submits a request to Congress, and Congress decides whether or not to grant it. Mm-hmm. I mean, what more can the district do in that regard?
Well, I would agree that that indicator is not strictly within the four corners of the case.
All right. So it is, as Judge Griffith suggests, this no dispute mechanism that's been instituted and tested. That's the gravamen here?
That's one. The other one is that the policies that they say that the court order, perhaps using your hypothetical before, that consisted of 1, 2, and 3, that's been in place for a number of years. They claim they have replicated the court order in their own policies. For the most part, that's true, but there are some key components of that. The one component that's particularly important is that they issue a timely final decision when a provider submits an invoice, which then triggers the duty to pay. Their policies do not contain such a deadline.
What do you mean they don't contain such a deadline?
The policy just says they will issue a final decision. It does not state within a certain period of time. The court order has a period of time in it.
Could I just ask you,
yeah,
in their brief, the district recounts what's been happening on disputes.
Yes.
And we're down to very few. Would you agree with that?
Yes, there are. They're now pending before the special master 6 disputes.
Right.
They are involving about 300 students. Because
right. And what are the nature of these disputes?
The nature of the disputes are the district's claim that in many cases that the rates charged by the provider were inappropriate or incorrect, that they had different rates. That's why at the time Judge Friedman decided this case a year ago, he said that the status quo needed to be maintained. One of the important elements was the lack of a rate-setting mechanism. Fortunately,
right, now there's a final rule.
There is, and that's certainly a big step forward.
More would the district have to do?
With regard to rate-setting?
Yes, they have a final rule.
No, I don't think they need to do any more with regard to rate-setting.
All
we
right.
agree.
So, presumably life is such that there will always be disputes.
That's right. And that's why they've conceded they need to have a dispute mechanism before the case goes away. And that's the biggest piece, aside from the policy questions that I mentioned before.
I thought they had some memorandum of understanding with the Office of Administrative
yes.
Hearings.
That's right. Yes, you're right. They have that. One of the two agencies involved has an MOU.
Is that, that's not sufficient? Or
the,
it seems to me, I mean, they have in place something to replace the special master. And so maybe I'm missing your point about
there are two agencies of the district that are involved here. One is OSSE, the state right. office, and the other one is District of Columbia Public Schools. DCPS does not have such an MOU.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
The other point is that the MOU that they do have is terminable by either OAH or OSSE on 30 days notice. So it's, in our view, not a durable or sustaining remedy.
Understand the way the district is organized now, the public schools and the determination as to whether or not there should be a dispute mechanism in connection with special education services, that's a matter within the mayor's control?
I'm not sure if you're asking me.
Well, it used to be that the Board of Education was independent,
mm-hmm.
and it made its own decisions.
Right.
The mayor did not. But then there was a reorganization.
That's right.
And I just want to be clear that is your position that the mayor has the authority to set up this dispute mechanism that would be the public schools would be obligated to follow?
Yes.
All right.
That's correct.
Can I ask, how do we know that these concerns that you've expressed are the ones that the district court meant in its order?
I agree that the district court's order was not extensive, but he talked about maintaining the status quo so that timely payments would continue.
Where's the words about the timely payments?
He cites what plaintiffs say. on page 667 of the appendix. Plaintiffs disagree, arguing the injunction serves a salutary function of guaranteeing private providers continue to be paid. And then he, on the next page, 668, he says he agrees that it would be disruptive to the status quo.
So that's the reference.
That's the reference, yes. Mm-hmm. I just want to mention that the court dismissed the, denied the defendant's motion without prejudice. We think it was correctly done, certainly at the time that he made the decision, given the gaps in, that I've mentioned.
Well, he took the position that Horn didn't require him to do anything different. He said status quo and moving towards settlement.
I think he thought that the district had overstated the significance of Horn,
right?
Do you
think that's consistent with the language of the opinion in Horn?
Well, I think Horn requires both two components, compliance and the durable remedy, that a durable remedy be implemented. That's what's missing in this case.
But do you think the district court's reasoning was consistent with Horn?
Yes, I do.
Did the district argue that Horn doesn't require a durable remedy? When the district court said that the court is convinced that the defendants have overstated this relevance and the significance of the Supreme Court's decision, is this with respect to the law or with respect to the application of the law to the facts? That is it your position, and was it the judge's position, that the district is not accurate in explaining what Horn said, or that the district was not accurate in stating how Horn applied to the facts of this case?
I think he was stating that they exaggerated the significance of the case, but as a matter of law.
So what did they say? What district counsel said today, there doesn't seem to be any dispute about the law. That is, their description of the law seems similar to your description of the law. Did they have a different position about the law before the district court?
Well, they took one position about the law in their papers, but then they talked about the facts. They did talk about a durable remedy in the facts that they had to institute these reforms. And that's what, so we basically don't have a difference on that.
On the law, you don't have a difference.
That's right. It's really a factual dispute.
Anything further?
No. Thank you.
Whatever factual disputes they are not material. It's undisputed that there has been sustained statutory compliance for several years. And as a result, continuing this preliminary injunction would cause harm to the district.
Did your opposing counsel say several years?
That's maybe what I heard, Your Honor. And the harm to the district by continuing this injunction is what Horn talked about, the erosion of separation of powers, the loss of local control over local functions. There's also the day-to-day harm, the diversion of resources but from agency officials that have to be dedicated to this.
What about the dispute resolution issue that your opposing counsel raised? Said there's only a memorandum of understanding in place for some of these and not enough.
It's simply a question of which forum will hear the dispute. There's no question that there is an available forum to hear any payment dispute.
What is it?
Well, ultimately, it would be the Superior Court. If it's not the Office of Administrative Hearings or the Contract Appeals Board, it's the Superior Court.
You'd have to file a complaint and get in line, hire an attorney.
How long does it take to get something through Superior Court these days?
I wouldn't want to hazard a guess, Your Honor, but it's no different than any other government contract.
Well,
there's no reason that...
The district, I gather, shouldn't make an assumption here, but in entering the memorandum of understanding, apparently decided that Superior Court was not an appropriate, or I shouldn't say appropriate, but not a sufficient mechanism.
I wouldn't say not a sufficient. I would simply say the district's trying to provide the best available form. It only has to provide an adequate. Office of Administrative Hearings is something that the plaintiffs expressed interest in and is using as a forum. And OSSI, the state superintendent, has a memorandum of understanding, and OSSI handles 90% of the payment disputes as measured, or payments as measured by dollar amount, and the majority of the invoices. Whether DCPS ultimately goes to the Office of Administrative Hearings or it ends up being the Superior Court, there is an available mechanism for hearing disputes.
Is there anything going on with regard to this issue?
My understanding is, yes, they're continuing to discuss and explore the Office of Administrative Hearings, but...
I had some vague hope that we might get a notice this morning, but in fact, just as we got the notice about the final rule. All right, anything further?
Your Honor, if I could just touch on the harm to the district, as I mentioned, there's also the cost in terms of attorney's fees that the district has to pay. And as I indicated before, there is no risk here because the district court will retain jurisdiction of the case, even if the orders that we ask to be vacated are vacated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take the case under advisement.